Blog Talk Radio.
This is Majda Anwar with the Pedowitz Group, and welcome to WRMR Revenue Marketer Radio. Usually every Thursday at 2 p.m. we will meet, but today is actually a special session. We're here with Leanne Wimberly to talk with a real revenue marketer to learn tips and tricks on how to make that transition from traditional marketing to revenue marketing. And it's more than just listening. This is an interactive show, so feel free to call in or chat, and we're happy to include you in the dialogue. Again, this is Majda Anwar filling in for Debbie Gagish on WRMR. Before I introduce our guest, I'd like to take a moment to define the term revenue marketer. We get lots of listeners who have not heard this term before. Revenue marketer is a specific type of marketer. It's not just another check in your do box who has revenue or revenue-related accountability through the kinds of campaigns, communications, and digital interactives they set up. They are responsible for the top of the sales funnel and interacting with and nurturing leads until they are sales ready. They use some type of marketing automation platform integrated with a CRM system to power their revenue marketing practice and to get their results. This show explores this role with all of its different facets, such as metrics, people and skills and compensation, organizational structure, processes, sales and marketing alignment, technology, of course, content is king, and demand generation strategies and tactics. Every revenue marketer on this show will tell us, you know, where they are today, and they're here to share their journeys, their successes, and their gotchas, so your journey to becoming an elite revenue marketer will be quicker and smoother. I am so pleased to introduce today's guest, Leanne Wimberly of Knowledgent. Leanne, welcome to the show.
Hi, Majda. Thank you.
Oh, I think I see Debbie calling in. Let's see if we can get her online. Hi, it's WRMR.
This is Debbie. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can, Debbie. We're live and on the show. This is Majda and Leanne.
Well, thank you so much. Can you give us the cue to get started so we'll be in the right frame of mind?
Yeah, sure. We just started. I just introduced the show, and I just introduced Leanne, and I was about to talk a little bit about Leanne and her journey to become a revenue marketer.
Okay, can you give me the musical cue so we can really get jazzed up for the show?
Yeah, sure, no problem. All right, here we go. One more time.
Hello, this is Debbie Gagish, and welcome to WRMR, Revenue Marketer Radio. We're so pleased to be with everyone this week. As you guys know, every week we meet and we talk to real revenue marketers, not experts, but people who are in the trenches every day, marketers who are making a real impact on revenue. Today we have a real treat because I'm actually standing in front of a group of people with a stupid headset on, and we're doing this live from OMS in San Diego, and it's hot here in San Diego, let me tell you, 76 degrees and absolutely gorgeous. Now, what is a revenue marketer? So we have listeners who dial in from all over the globe and who download from iTunes. A revenue marketer is a special kind of marketer. It's the marketer who has responsibility and accountability for revenue through the kinds of campaigns and the kind of interactions that they create with sales. It is a unique breed of marketer. It's not taught in graduate schools. It's not taught in undergraduate schools. And the B2B world is just now getting a firm grasp on it. So every week we bring you these great interviews from people who have already been down the path. They've sat in your chair, they've walked in your shoes, and they've gone from a standing still, I don't know anything about this stuff, to all the way to where they're making a real impact on revenue. Now, today's guest, and by the way, be thinking about questions as we go through because I'm going to ask you guys for questions, okay? So today's guest is Leanne Wimberly. Leanne, are you there?
I am. Hi, Debbie.
Hey, Leanne. And she's from Atlanta, Georgia. So let me tell you a little bit about Leanne. Leanne has been at Knowledgent, 5 years now? Six?
Yes.
Seven? Eight?
Six.
Six. And, you know, when I did a pre-interview with Leanna, she's been at this demand generation, this revenue marketing game, since a long time. I think all 5 or 6 of those years in her whole stay at Knowledgent. But what was interesting about her story was the fact that she's been through 3 marketing automation systems. So she's got a traditional background in marketing, and then all of a sudden she came into a company that said, we got to do it different. And so she's been on this revenue marketing path, and she's been through 3 systems. So we're going to explore why that is. So, Leanne, welcome to the show.
Hi. I'm happy to be here.
And you've got like 25 people here in San Diego for sure who are going to be asking you questions. But why don't you start with kind of like what was the beginning of your revenue journey? What was that like?
Well, you know, it was pretty early in the game when we first started to look for marketing automation. I'm not even sure if that term was coined yet. But, you know, it was, like you said, it was 2005, so it was early in the game. We knew there was more than email marketing out there. And so that's what kind of kicked us off to start looking for, you know, what the possibilities were of the technology. It was pretty much brand new.
What was the first system that you guys looked at?
Eloqua.
Okay.
And they were pretty much one of the only games in town at that point. It was pretty new.
And what kind of things did you guys do with Eloqua? What kind of, when you guys first did this, what kind of impact did it have on the organization?
Well, the ability for the intelligence was really new. You know, the company had had an email engine before, an email service. So that was not, you know, that wasn't groundbreaking. So there was the email capability there. But there was the intelligence that was gained through the website interaction. And then tying that intelligence with the email to tell us more about buyer intentions, that was really groundbreaking for us.
So now, and again, this was what year, Leanne?
What year? 2005.
Wow. And guys, that was a lifetime ago in this world. But now you guys are using Marketo today, right?
Yes, correct.
Okay.
We've been with Marketo since November.
So you've been through 3 systems. Why the journey through 3 systems? And, you know, what can you share with our group here? As they're taking, because some of them are looking at systems right now. What would you share with them?
Well, like I said, Eloqua was about the only game in town when we selected it. It was really had a lot of capabilities, and we went through quite a lot of growing pains. We kind of, well, not growing at that time, but we, the economy sort of caught up with our company pretty earlier than a lot of other companies.
You're fading in and out. Are you on a regular phone?
I'm not, but I do hear quite a bit of background noise from time to time.
Okay. Well, we can hear you except for the fading in and out, so just stay close to whatever microphone you're using.
Okay, sure. So Eloqua had a lot of capabilities. We were not using all of it, and we went through a cutback phase. And so we started to look at, you know, how could we get the basics that we were using and, you know, with a little bit of room for growth. But, you know, we really had some budget constraints. And so we started to look around to see what else was out there. And at that time, Pardot really fit the bill for us. It had, you know, the basics that we needed, and then it had a little bit of room for growth. And more recently...
Okay,
are you
fading out
okay?
Again?
Okay. Yeah, I'm hearing quite a bit. Sorry. So more recently, we found that we had outgrown where we were. So we needed a tighter link with Salesforce. We were doing quite a bit with the top of the funnel and sort of passing things back and forth with sales, acting on opportunities that were in the funnel. So we needed a tighter integration with that, and so that got us looking around again. And we had seen Marketo, and we thought that probably that was our path, our growth path, and these needs just sort of sped that up a little bit for us.
Okay, so I just want to clarify something. There's no good or bad system. People ask me all the time, Debbie, what's the best system? Which one is the best? There is no best. There is only what you need. So she's mentioned three systems, Eloqua, Pardot, and Marketo. Know them all, love them all, right? They are not equal. So when I had made the comment earlier around when you're going through a selection process, it's not about the technology. Taking the time to identify use cases and understand how you would be using that technology internally then kind of helps you go shopping. It's like if somebody said, okay, you need to go make a beef stew, but I can't really tell you exactly what to put in it, right? So, but this is a great example, and we find companies all the time who move from one system to the other. But one of the pieces of advice is that, you know, when companies, you know, go through cutbacks the way they do, I mean, they have to cut back. That's real. But what they've done acknowledging is they've certainly grown in their capability and their understanding of the systems. So you guys are using Marketo today, right, Leanne?
Yes.
Okay, so one of the areas I wanted to explore with you is really how you have aligned sales, you know, because that's just an age-old problem for marketers. Even though you've got this great technology that, you know, reads that digital body language, a great phrase from Eloqua, how did you get sales on board with all this?
Well, we stay very engaged with sales on a very detailed level, so you know, we know what opportunities we source. We have a lead gen team that sets appointments for sales, and so we track those on a detail level. So we get feedback on those almost immediately in the system, in Salesforce. And so just that, the need to have the ongoing, you know, communications we have about those individual opportunities, it fosters that relationship. We're working together. They are happy to get leads and appointments, and we're, you know, happy to take the feedback that they give us to make sure that we give them more better appointments and leads.
So how do you interact with sales? Because, again, you know, a lot of times the way marketing acts with sales is sales does their meetings, marketing does their meetings. So what are some specific examples of how you interact with sales? And further, what are some examples of how you together work on campaigns?
Sure. So one example of how we interact with sales is we have an early stage opportunity, and we call that stage qualifying. It's where they're really sort of flushing out what's there in that deal. So we have our lead gen team. They are comped on qualified opportunities, you know, so sales have to move it to a qualified stage. And so they have a lot of
Say that again, Leanne. And again, I don't know if it's our issue, but if you could just kind of back up 10 seconds.
Sure. So we have a stage where we qualify an opportunity, the sales team does. And we have weekly meetings with each salesperson to say, you know, where are some holdups in this opportunity? Are you having trouble reaching this person, lining up a meeting with that person? And so our lead gen team actually goes out and assists the sales team on those opportunities to sort of move them along. A lot of cases it's something as simple as, you know, just getting multiple stakeholders together for a meeting, make scheduling that. And that's just something that, you know, lead gen can just put into their queue and make happen.
So do you guys also, and that's a fabulous example. I mean, how many people in here marketing works to that level of detail with sales today? Raise your hand. We got a few people do. Excellent. It makes a huge difference, doesn't it, Kim? Okay. All right, so that's one example of how you meet with sales to better integrate and incorporate demand generation. What are some other examples of how you guys interact with sales, Leanne?
Well, you mentioned how they could help with campaigns. And so we have something that we call reason to buy now. So there's a reason to buy, which is nice, but a reason to buy now would be something urgent. So we take what sales is hearing about the reasons that people would buy now, and we fold that into our campaign ideas. So issues that are in the industry that are impacting the companies that we deal with, we fold that in, and then we create content around those issues.
Can you give us an example of something more specific around reasons to buy now, what you heard from sales, what they were saying, and kind of how you incorporated that into a specific campaign?
Sure. Well, Knowledgent is call center agent productivity software. And so one of the issues that's going on right now is something called a universal agent. So agent that can take many different types of calls, many different types of interactions, different channels. So that's an example of a reason to buy now. Another one is a very age-old problem is the inability to roll out new products quickly enough and enter new markets because it takes too long to get all of your agents trained on those new products. And
okay.
That one can go across the industry.
And you guys work with really large call centers, correct, like T-Mobile and Bank of America, those kinds of accounts?
We do. We also are doing quite a bit more now in the mid-market call centers. But, yeah, primarily our history has been with large call centers.
Okay. Well, how do you set up those conversations with sales when, you know, when sales hears a new message that they think is really important? Well, first of all, how cool is that sales is on the outlook to provide messages to marketing that they can roll into campaigns? How do you do that? Is it something that happens informally now? Is it a formal process that you guys use?
It is. It's informal. You know, if we're invited to the sales meeting, so we sit in and we try and roll out a new tool, you know, give the best practices for a tool. And by tool, I don't mean a software. Usually I mean something like a demo or, you know, a presentation deck or something like that. So if we have the opportunity while we're in there, we get feedback on whatever topics are top of mind for them.
Okay.
So we'll gather that way. We might Salesforce. I believe you're probably having trouble hearing me.
There you go.
Yep.
So what were you saying about Salesforce?
They actually track the reason to buy now in Salesforce. So we have that data because it's a gate for Knowledgent to say, there has to be a reason to buy now for this opportunity to become qualified.
That's
so we
an
put
awesome
that
idea. Okay. All right. And you guys sit in on the weekly quota meetings as well?
They don't go into as much of the quota in the meetings that we sit in on, but we are involved in the what they call pipeline mechanics meetings where they do more of that, where they're kind of going through stage by stage, what's here, what doesn't need to be here, what needs to move. And so we have more interest in that top level, and so we are involved at that level so that we can hear what's going on with the opportunities we source and with ones that they source so that we can hear some of those sort of nuggets that go, there's an idea, or they need some help here.
And does marketing at Knowledgent also sit in on the discussions where, you know, the executives are trying to set the 2011 revenue number? Are you guys part of those discussions as well, the revenue number for the company?
We kind of came at that one a few different ways. So the revenue number was probably pretty much already set, but we kind of tried to triangulate it a few ways to see if we all ended up in about the same spot, and we were pretty close.
Okay. Now, that's a little bit around how you meet with sales, and I think there was a couple of nuggets there for sure. Share with me the types of specific either field-based campaign or campaigns by rep. I mean, how do you guys do that? Because I know that a great way to build sales and marketing alignment is to do campaigns that are specific either to a territory, a region, or a sales rep. So how do you guys do that?
The sales team has targeted prospects, so and that list, you know, kind of evolves over time. But they have that list that they're trying to get into. So we develop these drip campaigns to kind of bring their prospects sort of up to speed to have some level of exposure to Knowledgent over time, while we're also doing outbound prospecting into those companies, and some reps will have a little bit more vertical focus than others.
So you cut out again, Leanne.
Yep, I said some reps might have a little bit more vertical focus than others based on their territory. There might be a lot of healthcare in their territory. There might be a lot of outsourcers in their territory, that type of thing. So we have some vertical specific campaigns and content that we bring into those campaigns.
So do you actually set up specific campaigns for each rep, or just do you do it by vertical, or do you do it by territory? How do you guys do that?
We typically will do it more by vertical. We have done it by rep as well. A lot of times we've kind of proven the lead gen model, and by lead gen in our terms, it's what some people call inside sales. So the people who are on the phone prospecting and calling on inquiry. Sorry.
You cut out again. Can you hear me?
Yeah, sorry about that. So in many instances, they're quite happy to let those lead gen folks, you know, be the primary point of contact on those until they get ready, until they become sales ready.
And if I could, I want to add something here. That behavior between sales and marketing is an indication of an advanced sales and marketing relationship. Because quite often what happens when you first deploy a marketing automation technology, sometimes you get, you know, when marketing, you should throw everything possible over the fence. You know, you maybe get hundreds or thousands of leads, for example, right? But then, and then when you kind of throttle back on that or not getting as many, even if they can't call all they want, okay, I'm not going to say what I was going to say because we are being recorded here, but even if sales can't follow up on everything that they've got, they still want the floodgates open. Even though they complain about the floodgates, they still want those floodgates open, right? So the sign of a mature sales and marketing relationship is when sales does exactly what Leanne says. Sales goes to marketing, just keep it as long as you need to until it is sales ready, and then pass that lead back to us. So they go from complaining about too many, not enough quality, to, oh, no, but I want everything, to, okay, marketing, you're doing such a great job. You manage the top of the funnel, and then you pass it to me when it is sales ready. So that's a great, I need to add that to this sheet because I think that's a really good indication. Okay. All right. So that's pretty important, Leanne. And so at what point do you guys pass leads over to sales? What is sales ready at Knowledgent?
We use a lead score to indicate sales ready. We are not in a category. We are typically, once someone understands what we can do, then they will find budget for it, either through operating expenses or related to one of those reasons to buy now, one of those big corporate initiatives. So, you know, we can't do that, you know, budget, time, you know, time frame, those typical five qualifying questions. So we use a combination of those things, some demographic data, some behavioral information to come up with a score threshold. And once we reach the score threshold, you know, and a lead gen person has had a conversation and someone has agreed to an appointment, that's when it becomes sales ready.
So how many people in here use lead scoring today? So we've got a few years. How many people score both on demographic data and online behavior as separate elements? Raise your hand. How many people score on demographic and behavioral data together as one score? Raise your hand. Okay, good. Okay. So do you guys separate out the score between demographics and behavior, or do y'all combine it, Leanne?
We combine it.
You combine it. We're seeing a big move toward people separating those things out because demographics really just tell you if they're qualified. I mean, it just tells you, is it the sweet spot? It's the behavior data that tells you the urgency. Are they ready? Is it time for me to pass that lead over to sales? And once you begin qualifying a lead, they may have all the points for quality, which means it's your sweet spot, but they may have hardly any points at all that say, you know, they're interacting with me and they're showing some real buying intent. So we're seeing as a model people separating out those two things. We also have customers, and this may be true in your company, Pete, you know exactly who your buyers are, right? And you know those buyers, and so you don't. You've got a list. I have another client, Nosco. They have a list. It's 800 people. That's it. That's all they've got, right? So they don't need a demographic score. The only people on that list are getting communications from them, but they do score on the behavior, okay? That's just a little bit of information about lead scoring. Now, Lee, I have a question for you. How many times do you guys change that lead scoring model?
3,427? not that often. I mean, we've made a few tweaks, but I mean, really changing the model, probably only twice.
Well, that's really good. Most people probably go through about 4 to 6 different iterations of their lead scoring model. And you know why that is? Anybody tell me? Why do people tweak their lead scoring model? Because you don't know what you don't know. If you've never stopped and taken a look at online behavior of your prospects and clients and began to analyze what that behavior means, where's the intent, how can you say this is the correct lead score? So typically a company will go through 4 to 6. I did an interview last week with Emily Salas. Oh, my gosh, I can't remember Emily's company's name. Masha, do you remember Emily's company's name?
No.
Who was it? No, it was another. Yeah, I think maybe Pedant. But she talked about how they do a lot of tweaking on their lead scoring model only because they really don't know what they don't know. And so they, and that cycle involves going between sales and marketing to say, if I pass a sales ready lead to you, sales, is it really sales ready? Are there other elements that we need to consider? Okay, so. Kudos, Leanne. If you guys have only, you know, tweaked your lead scoring model twice, that's pretty incredible. And when you pass a lead to sales, and you guys are using Salesforce.com, correct?
Yes.
How many people in here have Salesforce.com? Raise your hand. Okay, a lot of you do. So how does that lead get passed to sales?
For us, we don't, you know, we have the lead gen people who follow up and set an appointment. So we created a zero stage in opportunity stage that's pre-qualified. And so the only thing that is supposed to happen there is an appointment, and then after the appointment is over, it moves down, up, or out.
Okay. And this is a common model. One of the things that I'll talk about today is how do you structure a demand generation team. And a big trend that we're seeing right now are lead generation teams having inside telequalifying people on staff. There's a great case study from Bronto Software, Sally Lowry, in the WRMR radio series where she talks about inside sales. I believe that the Brain Shark interview also talks about it's inside telequalifying, right? And it's just that additional level. And part of the reason that happens, how many folks are familiar with BANT? Budget, authority, need, and time. So 50% of the companies that we work for say we never ask BANT questions on forms because everybody lies, right? So they don't have them on the form, in which case they want a telequalifying touch just to see, based on behavior, how ready these people are. And if it's ready, they set up an appointment. And then, as Leanne said, it either goes up or it goes out, you know, one way or the other. And how long have you guys been using an inside telequalifying model to set up appointments based on lead score, Leanne?
Let's see, about summer 2009, so about a year and a half.
Okay, and is that working well for you?
Yes, we started out, we proved the model with a part-time contractor for a little while, and over time we've added, the team currently has three in-house and one outsourced.
Okay, all right, excellent. And again, Knowledge is not a large company. How large is your marketing staff, Leanne?
Including those people, 6.
It's a pretty small team. It's pretty lean. Okay. So you guys sound like you've got a really good working relationship with sales, and you gave us some really good ideas for how you can integrate with sales. I do have a question for you. No, let me skip that question. I have another different question. You've also got a really good sense for working with sales to help them meet their quota. You're doing lead scoring. You've got the inside telequalifying. How many different nurturing campaigns do you have right now?
How many? There's probably only about 3.
About 3 main nurturing campaigns. And what do they look like? Are they long-term? Are they fast in frequency? And what do these nurturing campaigns look like at a high level?
They're pretty basic. You know, we have the, you know, just kind of periodic touch kind of thing that we use. And then we also have some others that, you know, I said after an appointment occurs, something has to go, you know, up or out. Well, out might be nurture.
Okay.
Depends on how you say out. And so that nurture.
He just cut out.
Yep, thank you. That nurture might require, a call during that time. So if they tell us why it went to nurture, either it wasn't wasn't the right champion or wasn't the right time, or there might be a few, they choose a reason for the nurture, and then those campaigns are based on what they told us the nurture reason was.
Okay. So how many folks here have nurturing campaigns running today? Raise your hand. Two? Just two people? Raise your hands high. Okay, nobody else has nurturing campaigns. Okay, you guys know what nurturing campaigns are, right? Okay, all right. It's the whole notion of drip, drip, drip. Now, the interesting thing at Knowledgent is that they are an unenvisioned solution for the call center space. And Leanne had mentioned this before. People don't sit around in meetings in the big call center space and say, wow, we need a Knowledgent kind of solution. It's an unenvisioned solution, right? It's a very, very unique kind of technology. It's not like you put on an RFP, a CRM, or something like that. And because of that, and because they deal with really large call centers, having a every 30-day drip campaign, just drip, 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 makes perfect sense for them. We have another client, M5 Networks, out of New York. They're an Eloqua user. In the first 6 months that they had Eloqua, they put in place 13 different nurturing campaigns. It's just a very, very different kind of business model. They had nurturing campaigns around Net Promoter Score. They had nurturing campaigns around people who were their service contracts were about to be up. You know, they had all different kinds of nurturing campaigns. And these are campaigns where basically you just think, how can I interact in a digital environment with a prospect or a client? Both are very, very, very valid. So, for example, we just finished up 36 interviews with Getty Images. And one of the campaigns that we'll put in place is when someone gets a ThinkStock subscription, 90 days before that subscribes, we'll begin a specific nurturing campaign. Another great example is Intercall. You guys know the teleconferencing company? Well, when you sign up for Intercall, Intercall knows that you're going to become a really good client if you use multiple. Number one, if you use your conferencing feature fast, quickly, and also if you use multiple features. So we set up different nurturing campaigns where, so if you buy Intercall conferencing today, you're going to be getting a note within a certain period of time if you haven't used your conference call feature, if you haven't done it for the first time. It's going to say like, hey, just want to remind you how cool this is. Likewise, they can also see what features you're using, and they can say, we see that you're using these two great features. How about using this way, right? So it's a way to nurture based on, and again, we can pull that data. We can see, you know, what they're actually doing. So that's examples with clients. So, again, depending upon how complex your prospect relationships are, so, for example, if you're the kind of company that, for example, does free downloads of software, and maybe it's a two-week or a 60-day free trial, you know those are going to convert at the highest rate. So I have clients that when someone begins a free trial of software every 2 days, hey, have you thought about doing this? Hey, have you thought about doing that? And you can also see what they're actually using in the software. So that's a great way to kind of not, I call it no lead left behind, and nurturing really helps you identify across the buying process and also the life cycle of a client, you know, where you can begin nurturing, where you begin that digital interaction. And so that's a great example that Leanne has come up with. You guys also do a lot of work, Leanne, really around key initiatives as well, right? So the key initiative, as you were talking about, maybe the universal client, those kinds of things.
Yes, yes. And, you know, there's several verticals that we're most successful in. And, you
okay.
know, we're always trying to craft messages around what
okay.
matters to the call center operations in those verticals.
Okay. So, Leanne, what was your background before you started using marketing automation? Describe to us your marketing background, the kinds of things that you did as a marketer.
Direct marketing, obviously, direct snail mail, email. I had done email, but not You know, and also the forms on the website, you know, your kind of later version, I guess, of Bingo Leads and advertising. You know, the basic coverage, you know, kind of background of doing whatever you need to do to provide leads. So the background that.
What would you say are the new skills that are required for the demand generation marketer?
Well, I think that, you know, either you have to have an eye for content or you need to make sure you have someone on your team who has an eye, ear, whatever you want to call it, for content. You know, everybody works in a space, you know, a vertical industry or a horizontal or whatever. So everybody works in a space. And to have a good eye and ear for taking your product and, you know, marrying it up with the topics that are interested in the industry. So make content is a huge piece to have on the team. I would also say metrics focus. You know, there, we've never had so much access to information before, but it can be overwhelming. So, you know, you need to be able to narrow it down to those things that are lead indicators of whether you're on track or not. And then, you know, the ability to build consensus and seek input from others. As marketers, as a whole, sometimes we have a tendency to say more than we hear or to talk more than we listen. So I think this is definitely a time to listen and, you know, and take what you learn and add your skills to it and, you know, produce something that's to the benefit of your company.
Okay. Are there any questions from the group?
Oh, such a quiet group.
Okay. Yes. Wait, hold on a minute. Linda. Linda has a question. What is it, Linda?
You mentioned that field would have lists for prospecting. Are those lists part of your CRM system or in favor of your
Okay. Leanne, you had mentioned that the field has lists that they use for prospecting. Is this part of the CRM system or are they rogue lists?
Are they what list?
Rogue.
Rogue list.
R-O-G-U-E.
No, our lead gen team is mostly following up on inbound inquiries and qualifying those inquiries for appointments. They do cold call prospecting, and I don't know if they would be considered rogue list, but it's a multitude of sources that they have. And go ahead.
Is everything in CRM?
Yes. Marketo mirrors our CRM, our Salesforce.
Okay. Anybody else? Dan?
Related to that is how much do the lead gen team prospect for outbound cold calls versus 14
out of 30 minutes? Okay. Leanne, the question is from Dan, and the question is, what percentage of the time does the telequalifying team prospect outbound versus taking inbound?
It has previously been probably 75% inbound versus 25% outbound. That is shifting. We're adding more people to the team. We're adding more salespeople. Inquiries will not be infinite. So that's going to require the cold call prospecting.
So it used to be that when you guys were first starting, 75% of the telequalifying team was spent on responding to inquiries. Is that right?
Yes.
So you guys are doing a pretty good job of getting the top of that funnel heated up, it sounds like.
Yes. And, you know, you talked about quantity. We sure poured a lot of quantity into the top, you know, throughout the 2009 and early 2010. And part of that was, as you said, it's sort of maturity, right? So sales did want everything we could give them. And then over time, we've dialed that back a little bit. So we are definitely trying to work more into quality now. But everybody still wants quantity, you know. It's a balancing act.
And it does take a while to get to the point where you've got enough campaigns with enough action, you know, happening where you can have enough work for either qualifying team or for it to go to sales and it to be relevant. And then as you continue to add additional salespeople, you've got to, you know, heat up the top of the funnel, as Leanne was saying. So we had another question. Pete?
Yeah, I had a question about revising the story methodology and how their team, how they, you know, and something they've done it a few times with some other groups out there. And so what it takes when they actually revise it. On the one end, when things might be going too high and they're setting things up prematurely with sales, and where they look in terms of that mean threshold that might be driving that.
Okay.
Okay. And on the other side, do they ever find themselves not turning things over quick enough and need to adjust certain aspects?
Okay. Okay. Leanne, Pete just had an excellent, three-part question, but what it nets out to be is, how do you determine when to change the lead score, and what does that process look like?
Do you mean tweaking the model or the actual score
yes.
of an individual?
Well, tweaking the model and, you know, and like the score. So, for example, if you say that they have to hit 90 points before we hand them over to sales, but you find that people who hit 80 points or 75 points might be equally valuable and they're kind of left behind, I mean, at what point, what is the data, how do you determine that it's time to tweak the model?
Well, when we first rolled out this most recent model, we thought we had a number. We, you know, we put all of our attributes together, and it looked to us like it needed to be 50, right, for example. We put that in play without changing behavior. We scored and continued
okay,
to
do that. Wait, this is really good stuff, and you're dropping out again.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. So when we first rolled out this most recent model, we scored without changing behavior of the lead gen team or anybody. We just wanted to see what was going on. We thought that we knew what the number should be based on the attributes. But we ran it for about a month and then looked at those leads that got passed and decided that we needed to tweak it. And then we also had this sort of wiggle room threshold. So our number ended up being 45, but we said anything over 30, we're going to ask sales about and to say, hey, would you want this? And if they say they would, then we need to change the model, either the model or the threshold.
And there's a couple of things around that model. So, for example, if you've got a salesperson who has time on his hands or her hands, and they're going to be doing some of their prospecting themselves, which is true in most organizations around the globe, I can either cold call or I can take the B leads. Right, that have shown some kind of behavior. And all things being equal, I'd rather be taking those B leads. So one of the things that we get asked a lot is, how much of the activity do you publish to sales? Do you just pass something that sales ready once it hit the score? Or do you kind of peel back the layer and let sales also see in the queue what the B and the C leads are? And it depends upon what kinds of activities sales is involved in, because at the end of the day, I'd rather then probably call those leads than I had, you know, cold call. Okay. Get another question? And again, the interview with Emily Salas, what she's doing, the lead scoring right now, is phenomenal. That was last week's interview, so go listen to that one. Get another question? No? Oh, okay, Deb.
On the number of touches that they're doing, if they're doing this nurturing campaign, I'm curious. I'm curious on where's the initial like driver?
Mm-hmm.
Why are they even interested? And then how often are they touching? And is it just phone calls? Are they getting all the information to generate them into a sales or in a lead?
Okay, so this question is from Deb in the beautiful aqua sweater, and it's about touches. So what does an initial touch look like, and how frequently do you touch them?
To become
sales rep.
Oh, gosh. You know, I don't know the number of touches it takes before they're sales ready. I think it probably varies. But our initial touch is an email. And by and large, our campaigns are mostly thought leadership, market education type campaigns. But they're obviously topics in the industry that our software can help solve. Let's see. You also asked me. What was the second part of the question? I'm sorry.
The initial touch and how frequently you touch them.
Oh, how frequently we touch. We're currently at twice a month, but we watch that pretty closely. And if we see unsubscribe rates kind of change very much, then we kind of go back and look to see Was it content? Was it, is it frequency? You know, did this crazy, you know, list come over from somewhere or something like that?
So that's a great question, Deb. And frequency is something that you have to experiment with. And again, it is, a lot of companies will lead with thought leadership as a way. Some lead with free, you know, Groupons or free, you know, software trials and things. It's just something that you have to play with because, and again, if you read that online behavior and if they start unsubscribing, you're bothering people or your content is just not, you know, what it should be. But you also need to be very aware of opting in, and that's a rule that we use. We actually, if someone opts in for something, we actually send them back an email and say, are you sure you want to opt in for this, right? And we always lead with thought leadership, and a lot of companies really, because that's an easy way to get people to opt in. If they think you're trying to sell them something and you're going to berate them with emails, you know, it's just not going to work. But again, you have instant access to the data about behavior. You can see instantly. You can mess up instantly, and you can see what you need to tweak instantly. But again, you get that view to the online behavior, whether it's at an individual level, campaign level, you know, however you want to see that. Okay. So, Leanne, I want you to, you know, think back to when you didn't know a lot about marketing automation and demand generation, and if you were giving guidance to the new revenue marketer, what are the top three pieces of advice you would share with them?
Top three pieces of advice. well, certainly start with, you know, what your contribution to sales should be. I think you want to, you know, kind of back in to what your goal should be based on that. So, you know, don't just kind of go out there and spray and pray. I also think, you know, being really intentional about content, like Debbie just, you know, noted, you know, maybe you want to lead with thought leadership, but, you know, develop sort of an editorial calendar, if you will, to kind of how you want to bring people along. Maybe you want to start differently and change things up or, you know, have them shift back and forth between topics of interest. And then, you know, test. My biggest learning would be to test because you will absolutely think that you know what something, which, what's going to win. And if you're not getting proven wrong at some point, you may not be testing the right thing.
Yeah, and she's right about that. And the great thing about having any of the kinds of marketing automation systems that Leanne mentioned is that testing is your best friend. Take another few days to test, and it can make a huge impact. Do A-B split testing on the subject line. Do A-B split testing on graphic versus plain text. I remember when I first got Elko, I had a big fight with my marketing team. I'm like, oh, no, we have to use these beautiful graphics because they're just so pretty. And our marketing team said, well, we're not sure. I'm like, oh, no, we have to have graphics. And so we did a test, and I lost. So, you know, but you never can tell. You cannot tell what people are going to respond to. And a couple percentage points can make a huge difference in the, you know, the revenue impact from a campaign. And we're going to talk about what that – from the top of the funnel to the bottom of the number, kind of what those conversion metrics look like, okay? And there's also a great interview, again, on WRMR called Trending, Tweaking, and Trying, and that's what it's all about. I think as marketers, we've lost our sense of experimentation, and this is an area that needs constant attention. It's not a part-time job. Being a demand generation marketer, it is not a part-time job. You know, it's not another check in the my whole list of projects that I have to do. It's a radically different capability, okay? We have time for a few more questions. Anyone have a question for Leanne? Yep. Wait, hold on a minute. Kevin. Got it. Okay.
Once you switch to a marketing revenue cycle, the company sees every growth, and the marketing revenue grows year.
All right, Leanne, you're being called out on your metrics. So
okay.
That's from Kevin. So Kevin wants to know what impact marketing has had on the pipeline.
Let's see. We generate 60% of a qualified pipeline.
Wow.
And let's see. I've got a different – I was ready with my stuff. I thought someone might want to know this. And, oh, my gosh. Well, I can't find my other number, but 60% of qualified pipeline, and for us, once something is qualified, marketing-generated leads behave just like sales-generated leads once they reach that stage of qualified.
So So let me ask you this. Did that number change once you guys implemented Marketo? Because you guys went from Pardot to Marketo.
Yeah, Marketo's new enough for us, but I don't know that I could say that it has changed since that. You know, we just implemented in October, got fully up to speed in November.
Okay, right. Because you guys just implemented Marketo when?
We were implementing in October, and we were fully functional November.
Okay. But one of the things that Marketo does have is a new solution called Revenue Cycle Analytics. It is the coolest thing I've ever seen for the marketer because for the first time it allows you as a marketer to manage a real lead funnel. Just like your VP of sales manages Salesforce, this is even better for managing a lead funnel for salespeople. It's a very, very cool new product. Okay. All right, any other questions for Leanne? Okay. Well, Leanne, we want to thank you so much for being on the show today. And thank you, because I know it's after 5 o'clock in Georgia, so we really appreciate that. And you have a great evening.
Well, thank you so much. I enjoyed it.